Okay, so hello again and welcome.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hello, tonight's conversation is relationship as mirror and teacher. And I chose this one for the first one because the arena of relationship affects us all in every area of life. When we think about it, virtually everything we do through relationship. And even more fundamentally, everything we experience arises from our relationship with ourselves. And so our external relationships can mirror back to us where we can move toward greater wholeness and self-acceptance, which fundamentally is self-love. And that's the opportunity and purpose of working with relationships as a mirror and teacher. And I'll be the first to admit this is a very challenging path because we constantly see things in others we don't like. And we have to keep bringing our attention back to ourselves to see what might need to be embraced or released. So this whole path or process of using relationships or seeing relationships as a mirror or teacher requires a very clear intention for self-love so that we don't simply start shifting our judgment from others to us. Because that's where the focus is. It's on us. It's on you. Here's the bad news. It's always about you. It may appear to be about the other person, but it's always about you. Or maybe a better way to say that is no matter what's going on in your relationships, it's always for you. You know, even if, or especially if you're bothered or upset, it's still an invitation to go within and to see what's ready to be healed. So I'm going to take just a couple of minutes here at the start to explain how it can be so that relationships are mirroring something within us. And it can be so because this is a vibrational, interconnected universe. Everything is energy, and everything is connected to everything else through what Greg Braden would call the divine matrix. And one characteristic of energy is that like frequencies resonate with each other. So since everything in our manifest reality is fundamentally energy, including non-physical things such as our beliefs, our thoughts, our memories, we're like a walking blend of frequencies, and we're emitting signals all the time, and we're tuning into signals all the time. And some of those signals are consciously chosen, many are not. But because of this principle of resonance, we can be shown through others what may be an unconscious frequency in us. And that's why we're using the term mirror. Our relationships are reflecting back to us something within ourselves. By recognizing what they might be reflecting is the art of allowing them to teach us. So let me just pause right here and just see if there are any questions or thoughts or comments about this first piece, about the energetic nature of the universe.
No.
Okay, so let me just lay a little bit more groundwork before we dive into some of the specifics. And I wanted to start with just an overview of a framework that was offered at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing, from which I graduated, but it's aligned with many spiritual teachings, and I'm sure it's something familiar to everyone on the call. But just to keep us all together on the same page, what I want to talk about before we dive into the detail is the understanding or the idea that all of us as humans share this universal wound of feeling separate, isolated, not enough. And this is what gives rise to what we call the ego. So if you're familiar with Eckhart Tolle and his work, this is how he uses the term ego. The ego arises from our misperception of our separateness. And yet we're very invested in maintaining that separateness because our very identity is equated with being separate. I mean, this is so basic and fundamental, it's easy to miss. So the ego falsely believes that if it loses this separate identity, it ceases to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So our ego consciousness, again, thinking in terms of frequency, this ego-based frequency creates all kinds of ways to maintain separateness. And all these ways that we come up with to maintain separateness coalesce into our self-identity, all of our sense, our beliefs about who I am and how the world works. And the fact that they arise from this ego-based consciousness means that they're actually contrary to the very nature of reality, because the nature of reality is whole and connected, but here we are perceiving ourselves to be separate and disconnected. So that's actually the source of our deepest pain, which creates what most of us recognize as self-sabotage, or what was called at this school the double bind, which is that we keep resolutely finding ways to maintain our separateness, even though that is the source of our deepest pain. And a key point that we'll keep returning to is that one of the primary ways we maintain our separateness is through judgment, which, you know, I'm sure we'll come back to again and again. And I just want to make the point that all judgment, whether it appears to be directed outward towards someone else or inward towards yourself, all judgment is self-judgment. Because even when it seems to be directed outward, the very impulse that we have to judge comes from that deep inner judgment that there's something wrong with us. It may not be conscious, but we're trying to cover this pain of feeling not enough. So we try to prove it otherwise. And one way that we prove it is by showing to ourselves that we're better than somebody else, so we judge them. But fundamentally, it's all the same energy. It's judgment. And all judgment is constricting, it's defeating, it's deflating. So we can't be in judgment and experience true fulfillment, because judgment itself is an act of separation, and fulfillment comes through the wholeness that we are. And so even with our insistence on separation, or perhaps because of it, we long for connection. And so this longing for relationship mirrors that longing for connection. And what many of us don't fully recognize is that the primary connection we seek is a connection with our own selves, our innate wholeness, our eternal oneness. And this pure longing for connection is also the natural longing to connect that arises from loving ourselves, from wanting to express that love and attract love to us. But that pure longing is obscured by all the fears, the false beliefs that arise from the ego, which themselves arise from the false belief that we're separate, that we're isolated, that we're not enough. So what is experienced from an ego consciousness is this fear of not being lovable and a desire to somehow prove that wrong by seeking or demanding validation from others. And again, this is not always fully conscious. And from this world of ego, we generally learn early on what love looks like and what we need to do to get it, because again, we think love is separate from who we are. And our relationships with and between our parents are very formative. They're really our earliest models, which become imprinted in our body-mind system as truth. They're conclusions that we've reached. They're beliefs that we see them as truth. And, as suspected, there's a large cat wanting to go outside. Let me open the door. Ah, but he's not going outside.
He wants you to go with him. What an ego. Sorry.
He just can't stand when my attention is diverted. Okay, so I was talking about the parents, our relationships with our parents, and also what we observe between our parents is really formative in terms of the beliefs that we start to form. And of course, our parents are generally acting from that ego place, so the false beliefs are carried from one generation to the next. I thought I could just share a very simple example from my own life. I think, like a lot of women in my generation, my father was very committed to being the provider, the financial provider, but he wasn't really emotionally involved with his children. So, you know, what I experienced early on was a father who was really emotionally unavailable. So that's what love looks like to me. It actually looks like unavailability. Now, he did value intellect and good grades, so what I realized was that I could get his approval, which felt like love, by getting good grades, by being smart. And interestingly, my very first significant romantic relationship and my marriage were with men who were unavailable in very key ways, but who valued my intellect. So they clearly mirrored back my beliefs about men and about love and relationship. And those relationships themselves were not satisfying or authentic. And so as part of my own personal transformation journey, I began to consciously work on becoming more emotionally available to myself, more emotionally honest with myself. That's how I used them as a mirror. And we'll get more into that in just a few moments, but wanted to use that as an example. And then, you know, interestingly, yet another pattern emerged with me, even as I was working on healing this emotional availability. This new pattern emerged where every man I met that I was attracted to had someone else in his life already. Everyone from a girlfriend to an ex-girlfriend to a wife. And I initially attributed that to this old pattern of attracting emotionally unavailable men, but I felt that there was something else about it, something else I hadn't yet recognized. And I was speaking with a friend one day about it. This was years ago, and she said, "Well, it sounds like you want to be chosen." And I had that aha moment where I saw my childhood even more clearly and the nuance of internally believing that I had to compete with my brother and sister for my father's attention and approval. And again, the way I was competing was to get good grades. But it was this notion of competition that I hadn't quite recognized before. And how it worked in my little girl mind was that if I could compete and be chosen, that would prove that I was good, that I was worthy. So I kept setting up situations in my adult life where I would be in competition. And again, that was the mirror. The teaching was for me to learn to choose myself, to not wait for someone else to choose me, but to choose myself. So again, we'll talk more about that when we work through the specifics of how to use relationships as mirrors. But let me just pause for a second and kind of step back again. You know, what I'm introducing here first is the notion that this is, as we all know, a vibrational universe, you know, where resonant frequencies are, attract each other, and that our beliefs, these powerful beliefs that we have about who we are and how life works, they have their own frequency. So they're going to resonate with things that are of a like nature. And this ego consciousness that all of us are in has certain frequencies, certain types of beliefs that come from fear. So, you know, we have all these mixed frequencies, mixed signals that we're sending out. So let me just pause as I open the door once again to see if Toby will go out. And he did go out. Okay, let me just pause here. Any thoughts, any questions about this first piece?
I agree 100%, Suzanne.
That was my sister, by the way, who has the same father.
Well, it's interesting. I never even thought of the going after someone who isn't really available to you being something that's setting up a competition. I never saw it that way, that false conflict.
Yeah, yeah. The emotional unavailability piece was evident early on, but that extra piece around competition, that was yet another layer of how I that's what I thought I had to do to get love. These beliefs were formed at such a young age. You know, we're not testing them for their validity. We're just believing them.
Well, because we are so young and we don't have a mind to think that way yet. So what we intuit and what we say is what we think is true.
Exactly. So if we go back to this idea of the mirror, so what is it that relationships mirror? They mirror our beliefs about ourselves, about others, and about how life works and about how love works. They also mirror aspects of ourselves that we don't want to see or that we can't see, things like impatience or irritability or being critical or being lazy. So they mirror these things back to us as well. And this is what's known as, you know, if we can't see them in ourselves, that's what's known as a shadow. I'm sure that you're familiar with that term, and that we project that on others because we can't see it in ourselves. Our relationships also mirror just things that we judge. We may see certain things in ourselves and others, but we attach judgment to them. So our relationships will mirror where we're judging. And our relationships also mirror what is good and worthy in us that we may have forgotten or just never known. And this is the golden shadow. So when we're really inspired by someone, when we're really deeply moved by someone, whatever that quality is in them is in us. And it's so important to know that. Although this conversation this evening is focused more on the things that upset us, because that's where some real deep healing can take place. But don't ever forget that what you really admire in another, what really inspires you in another, is in you. You couldn't even recognize it if it wasn't part of your frequency. So that's what relationships mirror. That, you know, again, they mirror our beliefs about ourselves, about others, about how life works. They mirror particular aspects of ourselves that we don't wish to see or can't see. They mirror things that we judge in ourselves and others, and they mirror what is good and worthy in us that we haven't yet embraced. And I wanted to share another example, an example about a relationship that mirrored a particular aspect that someone didn't want to see. This is a woman I'd worked with who also had been involved with men who were unavailable. And one of these relationships ended. He broke it off, and she was very upset, as you would expect. And but she understood the wisdom of his choice, and she moved on. But whenever she saw him, you know, he would always mention how much he still cared for her, and he really portrayed himself, at least from her perspective, as almost a martyr, that he had sacrificed this great love with her for the sake of his children and family. So he was really, in her mind, presenting himself as this martyr, and it really bugged her. She just thought, why didn't he just move on with it? I mean, he made the decision. Why can't he just accept it and move on like a mature adult, the way I have? You know, that's what she was thinking. And but because she was on a spiritual path, she was willing to look at that irritation, because she recognized that as a form of judgment, of a feeling of really being superior, that, you know, that she was more spiritually evolved, more mature than he was. So when she considered, all right, where am I a martyr? How could I, what am I a martyr to? She recognized that she was a martyr to this romantic notion of it is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Mm-hmm.
She was a martyr to that, attached to this image of being nobly alone. And that was an aspect of her. She was judging the martyr in him. That was an aspect of her that she needed to accept, to acknowledge, to recognize, but also to see that underneath of it, that what gave rise to that martyrdom was her own deep sense of inadequacy. She could justify it by saying it's better to be alone. So that was where the healing opportunity came in. The mirror was martyr. The teaching was, or the healing was in recognizing that in herself. And the point that I really want to emphasize in this particular example is that it was the irritability. Her observation of him as being a martyr had this real charge for her. And that's the indication that something needed her attention, something needed healing within her. Now, Ken Wilber offers a very useful distinction here, because, you know, we observe a lot of things in other people. And when what we observe informs us, we are perceiving. When what we observe affects us, we are projecting. So there are many, again, there are many things we might observe in another, things that we kind of like or don't like, but if there isn't a charge around it, it's probably something we've already accepted. If there's a charge around it, that's the invitation to look within. And again, the charge could be, you know, anger, irritation, frustration, indignation, or it could also be inspiration. It could be those, you know, those really deeply moving positive responses that we have. So you want to look for the charge. You want to look for the energetic charge in a relationship or, you know, in a that you have about a person, because that's where the juice is. That's where the opportunity for the healing is. So I wanted to, you know, tonight, since you're here giving me your time or giving yourself this time, kind of work through some of these, a way to work with this concept. And I wanted you just to think about one person, one relationship. Does not have to be a romantic one, but something that kind of bugs you or drives you crazy or frustrates you or upsets you in a relationship, either current or past. So just think about that. Think about the qualities of the person or how this person treats you, or just give some thought to a person or a relationship that is troubling or that it's that's challenging to you. And think of a specific aspect of it or a specific quality. Not just this person drives me crazy, but when they do this or when they say this or this quality they have. So try to be specific as you think about this. And now just ask. Be willing to ask without any self-judgment, what might this be mirroring for me? What might this be mirroring for me? What might I believe about myself that this treatment reflects? So if someone's treating you in a way that you don't like, you could ask, what might I believe about myself that this treatment reflects? Or when have I treated myself this way? Or when have I treated him or her this way? Again, you're looking for that resonant frequency. Another question to ask is, what do I feel is missing here? So it may be that you're observing something, but what's really bugging you is what you think is missing, perhaps kindness as an example. So then you would ask, so where have I failed to be kind to myself? Where have I failed to be kind to him or her? If it's a particular characteristic, such as my martyr example, you would ask, where am I a martyr in my life? You would ask, how many of all the people I've been in relationship with shared this characteristic? Because if it's a repeating pattern, that's something pretty important for you to look at. Might this be a mirror about my beliefs about men or women or whatever kind of person this is? Might this be a mirror about my beliefs And another question is, how does this really affect me? Because often, if we're totally honest, these things may not affect us at all. And what's really getting in the way is simply our judgment of it. You know, we often judge, again, as a way to feel superior, a way to feel separate. So sometimes if we're really, really honest, even though equality bugs us, if we really get quiet and say, how does this really affect me? We may recognize it doesn't affect us at all. So the only thing that needs to be released is the judgment itself. So again, here are the questions in case you are taking notes. Here are the questions as you observe things in relationships and you know they're mirroring back something. The first thing you want to ask is, what might this be mirroring for me? If it's the way you're being treated that you don't like, you might ask, what might I believe about myself that this treatment reflects? You might ask, when have I treated myself or treated him or her this way? You could look at what you feel is missing in the relationship and then identify that, again, say kindness, and say, where have I failed to treat myself kindly? Where have I failed to treat him or her kindly? If it's a characteristic, again, like the martyr, where am I being a martyr? How many of all the people I've been in relationship with have shared this characteristic? Might this be mirroring my beliefs about men or about women or about employers or whatever the category this person falls into? And how does this really affect me?
Suzanne, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you say, how does this really affect me, I'm not quite sure I understand that question. Like, I'm thinking back over things, and I have my answers, but I really don't know how to address that particular question.
So that question, let's just say you observe somebody is stingy, and you notice it has a charge for you. So you're going through all these questions, and you can't really find where you're stingy or where you've been stingy toward them. You know, you're looking for the mirroring aspect.
In myself, okay.
And you can't really find it. And you say, well, okay, well, how does this really affect me? How am I thinking this affects me? And you may discover it doesn't affect you at all, that you just happen to be judgmental about stingy people.
Okay.
And then you just, the opportunity there is to recognize judgment as an energy. Like, oh, I'm holding judgment. And so now am I willing to release this judgment? Does this person's being stingy affect me in any way? Not really. So they can be stingy. So that's just an opportunity to see where you've gotten in the habit of being judgmental, not you personally, but where we've been gotten in the habit of being just judgmental. Although normally if there is judgment, there's something. Like, you know, you want to get curious about, why do I think stingy is bad? You know, just kind of look more deeply at where might the judgment of stinginess have come from.
Okay.
What other questions are in your minds?
Hello?
Hello, yes?
Hi. Question. I have a sister who I have a very adversarial relationship with. And I think we want to love each other, but we, for some reason, we just can't come to it.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this way of talking, for one, just one tiny little example. And she has this way, and she thinks it's being honest and direct, and I find it extremely hurtful and painful and mean, but that's one of our differences. Anyway, so she looks at me. I think she she's jealous. I think she's jealous of me, and I think she resents me at the same time. And incorporated with that is a hatred. So it's like this big mix this big mess, you know, and so I try to interact, and she's been a great teacher to me, because through her I have totally been like, okay, let's be kind, let's be discreet, let's be tactful, let's not be mean, let's like go for the higher road. So she's been a fantastic teacher for me. But at the same time, it's been a tremendous loss and a hurt. And so every time I have an encounter with her, she like doubts my authenticity. She doubts my integrity. You know, she's always like looking to stab the weak points. I don't know how else to say it. She's got the needle out or the arrow out. She's just looking to like poke me. And so our relationship has suffered, obviously. So what do you think about that?
So as difficult as this is, and this is what I get, that this is not an easy path. First of all, I just want to really honor you for having seen that she is a teacher and that you're observing the kind of person you want to be and practicing the kind of person you want to be.
Right.
At the same time, since there's still a charge around this for you,
yeah,
then there's an opportunity to look at it even in a different way. So we just want to go back to this, and this is something that's really, really easy to do, which is, you'll notice that when she was sharing with us this, her relationship about her, with her sister, she was talking all about her sister, right?
Mm-hmm.
She does this, she acts this way, she does, which is completely, I mean, of course she had to do that for us to understand the situation. But when you think about your life, think how many conversations you've had like that. Well, he does this and she does that and he's mean and he doesn't, you know. And we may be completely right at a certain level about all of our observations. But where the juice is for us is to take the spotlight and turn it back on us. So we're observing them. We're seeing things in them. Now what this is asking us to do gently, lovingly, with curiosity, is to turn the spotlight back on us. And to say, for example, I think one of the things you observed in her was that she's always questioning your authenticity or your integrity.
Right.
That's a perfect one where you might say, have I ever questioned my own authenticity? Have I ever questioned my own integrity? Have I ever questioned hers? Like, you want to keep bringing it back to this particular thing that you're observing, even if it's distasteful. Where might that frequency be living in you?
Yeah, but you know what? That, if I may, just respond to that one little thing. I have questioned it ad infinitum, and I have, you know, responded, and to a greater degree than I think she recognizes.
So the judgment is,
except that I don't want her to be so mean to me.
So one of the judgments is, or one of the observations you're making, she doesn't appreciate, she doesn't recognize,
right,
all that you have done to keep this relationship healthy.
Yeah, she does not appreciate.
She doesn't appreciate that. So a place, again, gently to look is, do you appreciate all you've done? Do you honor yourself? Do you appreciate all she's done in whatever way she's capable of? Is the need to be appreciated coming from self-respect, or is it coming from a need to be validated? So you just want to look at, in you, this thing that you feel is missing, appreciation. Are you deeply appreciating yourself?
Mm.
Are you deeply appreciating whatever you can appreciate in her?
Can I just interject?
That's the kind of inquiry we're talking about. And I know this is not easy, because it's, I think anyone listening to what you described can probably empathize with it. we've all been in relationships with people that are challenging, and we're doing our best, as you say, to be on higher ground, to not incite, you know, further, you know, spirals of outbursts or anything like that. So we're holding an intention to have healthy relationships. And all we're saying here with this idea of relationships as mirror and teacher is that there's even further levels of liberation that we can experience. So if we're still feeling agitated about it, if there's still a charge for us, then there's further freedom that we can gain.
Beautiful.
And it's usually something like appreciating something more deeply in ourselves or letting go of any expectation that they be a different way. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Can I just say?
Yeah, please.
Thank you, because that's a beautiful piece of healing. Is there anything further that we can gain? Because the whole process has been so painful.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, is there anything further that we can gain? Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you so much for being willing to share all that. That kind of example is pretty, it's very revealing. And so often where the healing does come is in extending whatever we think is missing, if we think it's appreciation or kindness, to ourselves. That's the first place to look. That's the first place to look. When you think about there have been a lot of situations in people's lives and relationships around betrayal, or people have been betrayed, and it's so easy to become indignant about that. We have every reason to, and yet the healing comes when we ask, how have I betrayed myself? So this is what we're talking about is, you know, again, I just wanted to reiterate, you know, how noble it is to be in a difficult relationship and to keep holding the intention for being on higher ground. And at the same time, as we were just kind of talking about here, there's also a continued opportunity to free ourselves from any judgment and to really extend the greatest love we can to ourselves. And it's easier to love the other person when we're fully appreciating ourselves or, you know, fully being kind to ourselves.
So
just the willingness to ask these questions. I mean, that's why I gave them to you as questions, because it's kind of hard to know where to start. Like, a lot of us do get this idea of relationship as mirror, but, you know, but then what? Okay, what's it mirroring? So I wanted to give you some specific questions, you know, and really just look at them. In this particular example that we just brought up, the question that I used was, what do I feel is missing? And what she felt was missing was appreciation. And then the next question is, where have I failed to appreciate myself? So, really use these questions. They're simple, but if you work with them in a very kind of a genuine, earnest way, will usually reveal something. And just our willingness to ask, even if you don't quite get the answer, even if you don't get that aha, just your willingness to ask these kinds of questions opens up space. It, you know, just the very act of asking the questions creates a little space between your old perception and what might be possible. So it begins to loosen the hold that our fears and our beliefs have on us and creates an opportunity to try on some new beliefs. And again, it's very easy. It's very easy to see other people's patterns and to see other people's fears and the false beliefs and what they're doing and how they're reacting and how they're defending. And that's wonderful. It's very instructive. You know, there's nothing wrong with observing that in other people. It's just that if you get stuck there, you're talking to a friend and you're talking about your husband's tendency to do this or that or the next thing, and you're all involved in analysis and judgment, that's not where your freedom lies. It may be where you're learning something for sure, but in terms of your own healing, the key is to look at your response to the other person. So that other person continues to be mean. You know, another question that might have been relevant in what we just talked about was the question of, what might I believe about myself that this treatment reflects? So if someone's always mean to you, does that some part of you might think that's the way you're supposed to be treated? You know, at some early age, you might have been treated with meanness, but you were treated that way by someone who you love, so you kind of equated being treated that way with, oh, that's what love looks like. It means being... So again, that's the kind of question, wait a minute, is that really true? Is that really true? So you want to keep looking at your own response to the other person's negative patterns. Instead of focusing on them, keep bringing it back to you and say, how do I respond when they act that way? Does my reaction arise from fear or from trust? Now the question is, if I completely trusted that I am whole and okay no matter what, how might I respond? So again, bringing the spotlight back to you, not to look for your flaws, but to look where you're withholding love from yourself. So, you know, by all means, take the time you need to observe the other person to get clear on what they're doing and why they might be doing it, but take it the one step further. Come back to yourself. How do I respond to their patterns? Does my reaction arise from fear or trust? If I completely trusted that I am whole and okay no matter what, how might I respond? There's another example I wanted to share of a client that I work with. She had a series of relationships with men that were pretty volatile and short-lived, and the man would always be the one who would end it. And she would always, you know, and she didn't like the relationship either, but she was just ticked off that he ended it. So she would, you know, always ask him, you know, she'd call him, she'd, why, you know, kind of sort of demanding justification for that. And she recognized that was not a great pattern. But when we were talking about it, she said that in this most recent one that she wasn't going to do that because she didn't want him to think she was desperate.
Aww.
And even though that action, the choice not to engage in the old pattern was, you know, a choice definitely moving her in the right direction, the underlying motivation was still coming from fear, right? It was still like she was still cared how she looked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to appear desperate. So her focus was still on that ego-based need of for approval, in this case, approval of ending a relationship like a mature person. So if she hadn't taken the time to go a little deeper, she would have just moved on. She would have not called. She would have felt good about not calling. But within her, she'd still be carrying that tendency to seek validation from somebody else, and that would get carried into the next relationship. So always the value here is to bring more conscious awareness to these unconscious beliefs that are running counter to what we really want. And something that I have found, you know, very simple but helpful, you know, clearly when you're in a situation where you're feeling frustrated or hurt, you're not going to pause in the middle of a conversation and do all these questions. What might the way you're acting be mirroring for me? Like, you're not going to be doing all that in the moment. So, you know, something that I have used is just, I call on a simple statement of what I call the deeper truth. So let's say the person that you're having a difficult relationship, the name is John. So if you're in a conversation with John and it's just not going well and you're frustrated with what he is doing or not doing, you can internally remind yourself, my happiness does not depend on John. I'm okay no matter what. And again, this only would work if, in fact, you're willing to believe that. If, in fact, you've done some of this questioning when you've had the time to do it, when you've done some of this healing, and you really do have a sense of, yes, I am at the most fundamental level already whole, and I'm not dependent on anyone acting a certain way for me to be at peace. I'm not saying it's easy to live from that place, but if you can find some place within you that understands and is willing to believe that, then when you're in a situation, you can call on that. I used this a couple years ago. There was a guy that I met that I had a huge crush on, huge crush. And when I met him, it appeared that he would be available because he was getting out of a relationship. He was just ending a relationship. And then shortly after we started seeing one another, he learned that his what he thought was his ex-girlfriend was pregnant. So they got back together again. And he and I stayed friends for a while, and we would get together and I would find when he would talk about her, my old feelings of jealousy and not enoughness would surface. And I can distinctly recall a particular time we were together. We were having a great time, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm falling prey to, gosh, can he see how great I am? and he's talking about her. So I took a deep breath, and I said to myself, my happiness does not depend on him. And I just kept repeating that internally. And honestly, I really did feel immediate relief and even humor. It was very freeing. But again, it only worked because I had done a lot of work around that, you know, prior to even choosing to stay in friendship with him. So, you know, I had kind of a base that I could call on, like, okay, as ridiculous, as bad as I feel in this moment, I know that my happiness does not depend on him doing or being any particular way. So that's just something that, you know, kind of an in-the-moment practice or technique that we can use so that we don't react from a place that we know is not going to serve us, and so that we can then later come back and do this kind of inquiry that we've been talking about.
I imagine that you also look very different to them when you respond that way instead of fearfully or angrily.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I can remember in that particular, because that particular experience stands out in my mind, and I can remember when I made that internal shift, the rest of the afternoon just flowed really smoothly. Like, we got along great. There was no tension that might have otherwise been present. So you're right.
That was my clock. Sorry, it's fast.
So are there any other, you know, this is all that I had in terms of, you know, actual prepared material. We have about 10 minutes. Would you like me to turn the recording off? Are there other questions that you'd like to be able to ask?
Is it okay to ask, bring up another example on something?
Oh, absolutely. Would you be willing for it to be in the recording?
Sure.
Okay, because it really is, usually those are the most helpful. So, yes, please do.
That's fine. So, in this example, I've been working on stuff with healing with my mother, you know, about attitudes that I've had where I've looked back to feel, yeah, where I could see I acted like for verbalized internally or externally not being grateful for things. And now looking back, I can say, oh, yeah, you know, they were coming from a place of love even though it didn't appear to be that way. So,
mm-hmm.
And now... and so I feel like I've done a lot of work with that, but now with my son, I can see, you know, similar things coming up, and I'm going, but I feel like I've healed that a lot, you know, with my own folks, and it's hard when that same thing comes up then with my son, or at least that's the way I'm interpreting it. So,
yeah.
Like we were talking today, and he said, I was bringing up something about his health, something that I thought would be helpful in his healing, and he said, oh, I wish we hadn't brought up this, I wish I hadn't gotten into this conversation with you.
My immediate
response was kind of like to go inward and feel like I was being, you know, slapped in some way, not feeling like I was being appreciated for this great, you know, comment that I had made, but for me, the effect is that it affects me longer than just the moment of the conversation. I really have to work with, you know, what you were talking about, feeling good in myself so that I don't feel like, okay, now I'm going internal rather than feeling, you know, a lot of energy tends to drain me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going, well, yeah, you know, you have thought that about your own mom, you know, in the past. You didn't say it like that, like he would say it, but you thought that. So that's where, I mean, I'm looking back as far as where the oneness, you know, for me, or the, what is this reminding me of in my own behavior, and how can I not judge it? But I still am having trouble with not staying in that place of shame or being condemned so long.
And it sounds like what you're doing is you're observing the similarities between how you felt about your mother and then how he's communicating with you, and so you're kind of normalizing, like, okay, well, you know, all kids do that kind of a thing. I did that. He's doing it.
I'm just using.
And maybe the deeper piece for you, again, it sounds almost similar to the other example, was because what you felt was missing was his appreciation.
Yeah.
So we want to look at that. Like, that's, we want to look at the quality that is either bugging us or that we think is missing. And if it's appreciation, then the opportunity is, where have I failed to deeply appreciate myself? Where might I have failed to deeply appreciate him? So you just want to look at appreciation. That's the frequency that's calling for your attention.
Not necessarily in this content area, but in anything.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Because if, I mean, when you think about it, if you truly, just back to that question I posed at the end, if I can find it in my notes, something about if you deeply trusted that you were totally whole and okay no matter what, or in this case, if you felt deeply appreciated, like if you felt in yourself that you appreciated yourself, his reaction probably wouldn't have had that same effect on you. Mm-hmm. So, again, you want to look for you're looking for the certain frequency, because in this case, what you felt was missing was appreciation. So, really looking more deeply at how you can appreciate yourself, how you can appreciate him. Mm-hmm. And again, I know you do. It's just this is the fact that it still has some kind of a charge is just an invitation to, you know, surrender even more fully to this energy of appreciation.
Like even if a minute before I said something showing a lot of appreciation to him for something, which in fact did happen, and then this thing comes up, it's like don't assume, well, that I didn't really appreciate him or that I didn't, or don't even assume that he didn't get it. It's, And I guess when it's juxtaposed, like, you know, 30 seconds before I expressed deep appreciation about something and he said, oh, yeah, he felt like he really received that. And then the next minute it's like feeling upset that I voiced, you know, a thought. I shouldn't assume that that meant that I didn't really express appreciation or that I...
Yeah, yes. What's coming up in this part of the conversation is what we don't want to do with this exercise is to use it to judge ourselves, right? So she's questioning, did I express appreciation enough? So this is not meant to be an opportunity to judge. It really is not. Sure, you can question, can I, moving forward, even bring more appreciation into this relationship? But we don't want to turn this into like this searchlight of all of our flaws. Mm. Oh, I didn't appreciate enough. Because that's coming from that same fear-based place of that we're not good enough. Mm. So we just want to notice, again, think in terms of frequency. What's missing is appreciation. And start always with yourself. Start always with where or how can I appreciate myself more deeply? Because when we do, we don't look for appreciation from others. It doesn't become as specific a need because we've already got it within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Will do. Thank you.
No, thank you. Any other thoughts, questions, comments?
Actually, you had an example. Stingy, I'm stingy, you know, or something like that, and I feel bad if I feel stingy or if I feel like someone's thinking that of me. And you had a really interesting way of looking at it. Well, why do I think stingy is bad? I mean, the word has a bad connotation, but you could also say that you're basically protecting yourself, you know, by
yes,
not giving more
yes.
than you can afford or, you know, that it's okay for you to do.
Yes, this is a whole other element of this work that I knew I couldn't fit into a single hour, but it's pretty rich, actually.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of when you find a quality that you judge,
yeah.
First of all, to see if how you're naming it is causing it. As you said, see, stingy has nobody wants to be stingy, right?
No.
But if you look underneath, what is it? What is the actual behavior? What's really going on here? Is there anything wrong with this? Is there anything wrong with choosing to spend wisely? Is there any, so just, you know, look at where the judgment of stingy is
right.
coming from. I don't know if you're all familiar with the work of Debbie Ford, but this is an area that she, you know, has founded, you know, most of her teaching and career, learning how to really deeply embrace all these so-called negative qualities in ourselves and others so that we're not hampered by judgment, that we're literally free. So that might, you know, that might be something that's useful. Debbie, the one book that I've recently read is called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers.
Oh,
again, her name is Debbie Ford.
that F-O-R-D?
Yes, F-O-R-D.
And it was the light side of the dark chasers?
The dark side of the light chasers.
I got it backwards.
If nobody else has another comment, can I ask or bring up another thing?
Sure, we have about two or three minutes, yeah.
Okay, so what I was noticing for myself in this particular example was I was going, well, what's my underlying fear? My underlying fear was that even though I feel like I've, I don't know, gone, let's say 80%, I have tremendous healing with my mom and my former husband, who I had, you know, similar issues come up. But with both of them, you know, I can't be around very much. So the deepest fear underneath this is if my son talks to me this way, the fear is, well, then I won't be able to be around him either. And that I became aware of, you know, in terms of why does this upset me so much?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. See, she's identifying the story she has about this. She's making it mean something, or she's investigating, what have I made this mean, and is that really true?
So for me, it feels like, you know, in terms of really being able to challenge that meaning, that will be a tremendous sense of freedom for me.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're coming up on our hour. For those of you that are local, I just wanted to remind you that next Saturday I'm having a 2.5-hour workshop on healing relationships, so we'll go into this in a lot more depth. We'll have exercises and meditations, and we'll do a short ceremony at the end to release what we're willing to release. So if you're available and interested, I hope you'll sign up. And, of course, I always invite anyone who wants some support through this to consider the private coaching as well. So, this concludes the first free teleclass. Any final thoughts, questions from any of you?
Oh, thank you.
Very
this
much.
Was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again so much for your time. And I will, as I mentioned, have this recording available. I don't know that I'll have it make it broadly available, given the cat interruptions, but I'll make it available to you in case you want to listen to it again. So thanks again for your time and for your care and for your energy, and have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Suzanne.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.